The mission is simple: to help high achievers naturally eliminate emotional and physical obstacles so they can optimize their life for higher achievement. Welcome. You have just entered the Genesis Zone. Good day and welcome to the Genesis Zone show. This is Dr. Brian Brown. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. You're in for a treat today in our ongoing Wellness Warriors series. Today, we're joined by Sapna Rod. Sapna empowers parents who want homes filled with kindness, connection, joy, and authenticity. Using her gifts of empathy and compassion, coupled with her joyful spirit, Sapna guides parents and families to step into the best version of themselves by helping them identify and celebrate the unique contributions they bring to the world. Her work has been featured in multiple media outlets and organizations, including the People Impact Network. When Sapna isn't teaching you, you can likely find her on some adventure around the world. In today's Overcomers segment, Sapna will be sharing her experiences in the area of learning to care for yourself. So we can better meet the needs of those we're called to serve. Like many of us, Sapna's passion and gifting are born from her own past challenges. Today, she will share a bit of that journey with us and how she overcame those obstacles and learned how to connect with herself at a deeper level, which trickled down to all of her relationships. Whether you're a parent or not, the valuable insights that Sapna has to share with us can be universally applied to optimizing ourselves for higher performance through more peaceful relationships. Sapna, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing so good. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brown.
Thank you for being here. Before we dive into the main focus of the interview, our audience would love to get to know you better. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood backstory?
So to go back into my childhood, you have to understand the context of it.
Okay.
Parents, both of them were the first generation to be educated. So they went to college, they were the first ones to go to college, have a regular job. So it was so important for them. They were the first ones out of the day-to-day survival. Day-to-day, where are they going to get their food from? That was the generation before them. The job and working became very important to them to get out of poverty. So it was work. My dad used to travel a lot. My mother had to take care of me and my sister. And traveling hours together to get to our job, coming back, providing for us. So just to understand the context, it's so hard having two kids, traveling, doing the job. And self-care, the word itself was unknown. The word was used, the more you care for others is how your worth was shown. Like the more you care for others, you are seen as the worthy person. My parents' culture in their generation. But me, as a child who doesn't know anything of this, I had high needs. I could not see my parents' perspective. So in my immaturity as a three-year-old, what meaning could I make out of what was happening in my environment was, my parents don't have time for me. They cannot sit with me. They're either tired or working or doing something. Maybe I'm not worthy. This is the story I had made up in my mind. And everything around it was about my worth. Oh, they could not get me this. Oh, that's because they don't like me. Oh, they like my sister better. Every story I made up was about me and And it took me a long time to realize this. My teens were rebellious. Now I had to get their attention. I became the rebel child. I would do anything to get my parents' attention. That's how my whole childhood and teenage years was. There was no connection there. I was trying to get their attention. A little bit of attention was like good enough for me, but I didn't know the positive attention. So I went to the other side. anything that would get me their focus on me, I was like, wow, I was winning.
Whether it was positive or negative.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
It didn't matter. Yeah. So if I'm hearing you correctly, your parents were the first generation in your family and your extended family to go to college and be focused on making a career for themselves. Mm-hmm. And in that, it sounds like maybe the kids got a little lost in the shuffle, so to speak, or at least that's what you were thinking in your mind. And you took that personally, and that it affected your self-worth. Like everything evolved around, oh, this just further validates that I'm not worth much to them. Is that correct?
I was not worth much, and everything dependent on how much I performed. Was I a good student? Was I doing everything right? It was everything based on my doing. My being was not noticed. And I didn't know that until I was an adult. So everything was like, are you doing well? What are your grades? Are you clean? I mean, have you dressed up a certain way? Do you look a certain way? Everything was, you know, on the doing part of it, not the being.
Right. That's interesting that you say the doing part, not the being, because I think we get so caught up in being human doings that we forget to be human beings. And it's interesting you use those words. So yeah, it sounds like that self-care to your parents was more about meeting the needs of others above and beyond their own need, even the needs of their family. And then self-care to your parents was also tied into your performance. If you performed well, that was all the self-care that you needed. Does that sound right?
Yeah. If you performed well, then you had the money, then you can do what you want to, then you can have all the self-care you want.
Right.
So it's not to put them under the bus, but as I told you, you know, the context which they came from,
right,
having no food, this was a luxury to them. So what was self-care? Are you doing self-care? Are you doing, you get to have food and water. Now, what else do you want?
Yeah. And in the context of things, they were probably the first generation in their family that had access to purchase things freely. Not whatever they wanted. I mean, there was all these limits. There's limits no matter how much money you have. But they were probably that first generation, and they thought, well, this is self-care in and of itself. And how old were you when you remember that it clicked with you, like, something's not quite right?
Everything was focused on the doing. Everything. I was like, how is it that if I get a low grade, or if I asked a question, it's not only about my parents, Dr. Brian, it was about the culture and the institutions, even the schools I went to. Asking a question was looked upon as not knowing something, meaning, how could you be so dumb? I started dimming my light, not even asking questions, because if you don't know something, how could you not know something? You know, that was the attitude or the energy that was being put out. Everything seems off somehow for me. I had this something is wrong kind of a feeling within me. I could not point to it. Like, I could not ask a question. Like, how can that be so wrong? How could I be looked upon as if I'm dumb because I asked a question? I stopped asking questions. Can you believe this? That I could not. I started thinking not knowing is because I'm not worthy of knowing it. Right. Or I'm stupid. And I started making everything negative about myself because of the immaturity. And that's how most kids' brains are. Because the prefrontal cortex itself is not developed until a certain age. So we cannot make up those meanings
in
a conscious way.
Right.
So we are left to the unconscious ways of thinking. You know,
right.
Unless somebody guides us the right way of thinking.
Right.
How can somebody guide us if they themselves are lost?
Right. It sounds like you're admitting that even though as a child you were having these thoughts, and even though mom and dad were doing as best as they could, your immature brain, your undeveloped brain, was perceiving that you know, it was unfair. This is not right. And it was very me focused. Is that right?
Yeah. Very true. It was all about me.
Yeah. Which is, you're right. It's very normal at that age.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing your story. In our overcomers segments, which is the one we're doing now, we focus on exceptional people who've overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles and live to tell about it. Could you share with us the details of one or more of those obstacles that you've overcome in the course of your life?
First was to understand myself. This was my biggest and the hardest journey I have ever had to take, to learn about myself, going inward. We, as a culture, as a human beings, we are taught to look outside for everything. If something goes wrong, we look outside. We focus on what's wrong, who did this, who created this, pointing fingers, blaming, our eyes, energy, vibration, everything is outside looking. The problem with this is it's faulty because we think we didn't do anything about it. We have no part in it. So we start looking outside. But this is where the Eastern mindfulness comes in, where we are trained to look inward, though not all the people in the Eastern tradition do this or practice this. But anciently, we have been taught to look inward. For everything, we are taught to look inward. So this was my hardest journey. As I told you before in the segment, this was building up. Everything that was projected on was my unworthiness. Everything that mirrored back to me was my unworthiness. In everything, in my education, in my work, in my relationship. And it was causing so much pain. Now I had to do something about it. The pain was becoming too much. It was intolerable anymore. I could not tolerate it. Like, what could be worse than the pain I'm going through right now? I'm going to do everything it takes. So that's when I started this journey, going inward and unpacking. And each belief, each attachment I had, when I had to lose it, it felt like death to me. Like, wow. Like, if I'm not this, then who am I? Who am I? Staying in that space of emptiness, not knowing who I am, was very scary. Being in that uncertain place, not knowing where my future is, not knowing about myself. That led me to truly, truly understand myself in my essence. In my truest essence, I am not my beliefs. I'm not my culture. I'm not my gender. I'm not even my body. When I hit that, I can get teary-eyed about it. I was like, I'm the source itself. That journey was the hardest that I ever did, but the most, most rewarding ever. I would do it ever and over again just to get to that place.
That's amazing. Just out of curiosity, how old were you when you started that piece of your journey?
It started with the birth of my son. Until then, the pain was not enough. I will tell you a quick story about that. There was this man who saw a dog who was constantly whining. And this dog was sitting right next to a beggar. And it was constantly whining. And this man went and asked the beggar, "Why is this dog whining constantly?" So the beggar said, "That's because it's sitting on a nail." So the man asks, "Then why doesn't it get up?" So the beggar replies, "Because the pain is not strong enough yet." So that pain itself becomes comfortable for a while until it's not.
Right.
Then people are attached to their pain until something happens and the universe says, "Okay, now you have to come out of your ego. You have to come out of your pain."
So you lived with that pain and that discomfort for a long time.
For a long time. And I thought that's the way to be. I thought that was to be. I thought that was normal. I thought what life is all about. I thought I had no choice. I thought I thought that pain was me. I identified with the pain so much. Until my son was born.
And, you know, it's easy to say that, okay, well, that's a cultural mindset, but that's not true. I think that's universal for everybody. I think we all have this tendency to sit in our pain, no matter what that pain is, and until we wake up one day and like, oh, we don't have to live this way anymore.
Yeah. But until then, we have to deal with the pain.
Right. So,
but when my son was born, now I was like, okay, I was noticing how I was passing it on to him.
Mm.
That's when the journey.
That's when you had to start dealing with it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You mentioned, let's go into that a little bit. Let's go into that a little bit. You said that looking inward was the hardest journey. Why was it so hard?
You have to face your fears, fear of not knowing, a fear of, okay, if I'm not my job, who am I? If I'm not my education, who am I? If I'm not my culture, who am I? If I'm not a good mother, then who am I? Those questions I had to answer, and it was very scary. It was so scary. Who am I? Usually people are scared to enter that space because that's the space of unknown. And
is that the space of emptiness that you were talking about?
Yeah, it's a space of emptiness. Yeah. You are so much whole. You don't need these labels, these attachments. And suddenly you have nothing to hold on to. Imagine you have nothing.
Right. Everything that had defined you up until that point, you're stripping it away.
Yeah. And then who am I? Nothing. This emptiness.
Yeah.
Where you truly have to live.
Hmm.
This is scary for people. People are scared of their own geniuses, their own power, their own light. People are scared of this. They're not more than they're scared of their own pain. People are scared of their greatness.
Mm. That's interesting. How'd you come to that conclusion?
It's massive. You have so much responsibility, right? Suddenly now you are, you have no, what to say, comfort blankets. You don't have those anymore. Security blankets anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're raw, you're open, your heart is open, which means it can be broken. You have to stay in that curiosity, that open space. But knowing if it's broken, you're still okay. And you go back to loving again. But people are scared of that broken place that they close themselves up. But when you're in this space, you're open. Everything is, nothing is wrong with the world. Everything is beautiful. You love more. But people are scared to love more, right? Because they're scared of pain.
They're afraid they'll get hurt.
Yes. Yeah. They're afraid of the pain, which in Eastern tradition and meditation they teach you, they're just sensations in the body. We are not taught this. We should be teaching kids this. These are just sensations. But we demonize this pain. It's a lesson it's trying to tell you. It's giving you a message. But we are so scared of this, we hide out totally. We hide out our brightness, our greatness, our geniuses. Because we're scared of this sensations, these vibrations in our body.
Wow. Yeah. And that fear will keep us from achieving that greatness that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. What impact, talking about these obstacles that we've just kind of been dialoguing about, what kind of impact, positive or negative, would you say that these obstacles have had on your life?
The obstacles, I would say, they showed me a detour. Like, this is not the way. Turn around. Maybe there's another way. Every time there was a block, told me to, again, turn inward. You're looking the wrong direction. Go inward. There's something inside you that's scared. There is something inside you stopping you from believing. Look inward. Every block, every obstacle. Now it's become second nature to me, Dr. Brown. Before, I would be scared. Again, it would take me back to the unworthiness. Oh, this job, I'm not getting this job because I'm unworthy. This person is unworthy. This person didn't wave at me because I'm unworthy.
So do you think that's why people don't like to look inward? They're afraid of that dialogue that will start back up?
Yes. They're afraid of the mess, but you have to go through the mess for a clean place, right? We are afraid we have to look at our messy house first to have a clean house. If we are avoiding the messy house, how do we get to the clean part? We have to go through that mess.
So interesting. We live in a culture now, it seems like here in the Western world anyway, that's very that's very me focused and not in a good way, but it sounds like what you're talking about when you need to look inward, you're talking about something much deeper than that surface. I call it the social media persona life, that me focus type mentality. You're talking about mentality. You're talking about something much deeper than that. Am I correct?
Yes, definitely much deeper. And I usually integrate the Eastern mindfulness and our Western psychology, which really, really helps to understand. So when you integrate both parts, you understand you're going inward and everything that comes up, oh, you know why it's coming up, like a belief that I'm unworthy, which I had. When I could use the psychology piece of it, I could understand how I got to be where I am. How did I make up that meaning about unworthiness? So the Eastern mindfulness and the Western psychology, they both play a big part.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I think we'll have you back on a show really soon to kind of flesh that out and talk about those exact things from your expert standpoint, because I see that being a totally separate show. So awesome insight there. You had mentioned something a moment ago that when you were talking about being, you know, looking inward, and that fear or those voices that we hear over and over almost repel us back out. And experience that just one or two times, or was it something when you went to a different level each time you experienced that?
Oh, I live with it every day, even now.
Even now,
coming to the show, I had those voices there, but my relationship with them has changed. The way I relate to them has changed. I lead them now. I do not believe them. Now, I have taken the leadership place in this role between me and my mind, And I listen to them from a caring place, and I understand them, and I put them at ease rather than believing them. I have a conversation with them. I understand where it's coming from, not pushing it down, not ignoring it, like most teachers say, like letting it sit at the back of the car, but not driving your car. Most people put it in the really back, and but I let it sit at the back seat. I listen to it. I don't let it touch the radio or the steering wheel.
Yeah, and most people will let it drive the car.
Yeah,
what you're saying. Yeah. I think you're right. I think that's a big mistake that a lot of people make. I'm so appreciative that you've taken the energy from these childhood and the early adulthood experiences and crafted them into something very useful and constructive. I think here's the beauty of your story. You know, many of the lessons and principles that you've brought up can be universally applied, whether you have children of your own or you're simply trying to make your other relationships within your life more healthy. So I have some questions that I'd love to explore in regard to relationships in general. The first one that came to mind is with regard to releasing yourself from expectations. What are some negative expectations that you saw that you were placing on yourself that looking back were destructive?
Women especially, this is globally, I've seen this not only with myself, but globally with women, as I started doing this work, women put this on a lot, the way they look. They have to be a certain weight. They have to make money. They have to be awesome moms wearing the cape, making awesome meals. Women have been placed in this role, right? These messages were given to me very early on. To live a certain way, you have to perform a certain way, talk a certain way, not laugh too loud, talk softly, don't be too loud, don't be arrogant. be nice. This was the biggest message, not only me, but every woman I know has this. Be nice. Be nice meaning what? Don't voice your opinion. Don't say anything too bad. Mm. Don't protect others' feelings.
Mm.
No matter how bad you are feeling. These were the cultural messages in my home, in my culture, everywhere I see this.
Mm-hmm.
I had to let go of all this. Letting go of this, I had to, again, inspect. Does that make me a bad person? Am I not a nice person if I'm not being nice? No, actually, I'm more loving and compassionate when it's flowing the other way around. You know, when I'm loving to myself, I can pass it on to others.
Mm-hmm.
Irrespective of what other person thinks. And again, I had to learn this. Everybody comes from their own filters, from their own childhood, their own stories. So whatever they're thinking about me has nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to inspect this. I had to go inward again, this journey, let go of all this expectation. And which is hard. When I used to put boundaries, it was scary as hell. Because I was scared of their backlash. I was scared of the judgment. I had to take that route. I had to do what it takes. I had to do everything that scared me. And once I realized that, I felt more powerful. It was me. Everything was on me. I was not placing the boundary.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And hoping the other person changed. No, that never works.
So, I think people are afraid of boundaries, it seems like, because they might have to take the cape off. You know, it might change who they are. And again, it goes back to your story about the dog sitting on the nail. You know, he's miserable. He's howling. He's in pain. Yet he doesn't move because the pain is not large enough. And we keep doing these things over and over again because it seems like society or family or life in general is just kind of scripted it that way for us. So we keep living out that script.
But universe is very benevolent. It will keep pushing you. It will keep testing you. It will tell you to wake up. It will tell you to come out of your story. It will tell you to break out of your imagination. It will tell you to, until you do. You've heard this. You might have heard this so many times. It gives you the break, the stone, the break, and the whole brick fall falls on you again. You know?
Yeah. That
happens. If you don't wake up at the first pebble, then the brick. If you don't wake up, then the whole wall will fall on you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a dangerous place to be.
Oh, yeah. Dangerous in a way that now you have to wake up.
Right. You're forced to wake up. Yeah. You're forced to get off the nail and move. Yeah, I get it. So maybe not so dangerous. Maybe it's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. So in relationship to that, all of these expectations as a female that you feel like were placed on you through your culture, your family, just being a woman in general in the world. How did you overcome those negative expectations? I know you say you had to turn inward and you had to face those, but explain to the listening audience how you did that. How did you look inward and what did you do? What was that journey like? Some tips that other people that might be listening may be able to take this and say, okay, I think I can start doing that.
One of my biggest challenges in this was placing a boundary, as I said, but placing a boundary with my mother. This was the hardest thing I had to do because I was taught to be a good girl, a good daughter, a good person. Yes, I am. But now how can you place a boundary on your own mother who raised and who did all your sacrifices? But there were certain things that was not working, and I was constantly expecting her to change, and which was not working. I was becoming miserable, which was affecting our relationship. But what did I want? I wanted a deep connected relationship with my mother. This was my goal. But what was happening? I was tippy-toeing around the topic. I was not able to place a boundary, which made me resentful. I was upset with her, which showed up as yelling and screaming. And my mother misunderstanding me, I misunderstanding. It was not working, basically. I wanted the connection part, but on what, now I had to place the boundary. So I had to become very clear as to what did I want. I wanted a deep connected relationship with my mother. Mm. What did that look like? Where we are able to voice out what we are feeling without taking each other's opinion personally. This is what I wanted. Now, for her to not misunderstand me, I wanted her to listen to certain, things. Like for small things, she would misunderstand me.
Mm.
And she would make it about her, and we would have a big fight, which would make me upset, and it would spill out at my work and my health and relationship, and vice versa to her as well. So now boundaries means I had to be very strict. If this occurs, then this will happen, meaning you will not get to talk to me.
Mm.
That was so scary because there was huge judgment placed on that. Like, how could you do that to your own mother? This tape was playing in my head. But I had to do that. Put that boundary on her. And it was painful. I was very mean to myself, but I stuck with the boundary.
Mm.
I told her if these changes don't happen, then we cannot be in a relationship.
Wow. So it sounds like that was almost a two-step process, which is easy for people to take and run with. The first step was set the expectation. It sounded like you set the expectation with the boundary. You used the example of your mother, but it could be with anyone. But you set the expectation, and then you say, if this boundary is violated, this is what's going to happen. And you set, dare I use the word consequence? Is it okay to say a consequence of violating the boundary?
Mm-hmm.
And then it sounds like it was in those two steps, as simple as they sound, it was a little bit difficult to carry out. Was it a little bumpy in the beginning?
It was very bumpy.
How did your mother respond to that?
It was hard. But let me tell you this, though it was hard, we have the best relationship now. Mm. Had I not placed the boundary there, we wouldn't have been clear on each other's expectation.
Wow.
I enjoy a very good relationship with my mother right now because of that. So if people are getting scared, I would tell you it was very hard, but it will give you peace. It will take you to peace. And if your relationship works out, then that's the icing on the cake.
I can see where you have to do a lot of self-reflection. You have to look inward, as you said, in order to be able to build up the courage, because those voices want to hold us back, don't they?
Yeah.
That fear wants to hold us back and say, no, you can never do that. You're being a bad daughter. You'll never do that. You're being a bad daughter. You're being a bad son. You can never do that. And so that's what you were talking about by turning inward, looking inward and addressing those voices and saying, no, it's okay for you to be along with the ride, but you're going to be in the back seat. And you can't touch anything and you can't say anything.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Being a good girl was not working out either, right? If it was working, I wouldn't have to play. It was not working for both of us. Being the quote unquote, the good girl was not working out either.
Right. Very, very interesting perspective. So what you're saying is, and you use the term good girl, but what you were doing in the moment, what you'd been doing all your life was not working.
Yeah.
It was not working. So you knew something had to change.
Yep.
Good for you for changing that. I mean, good for you for doing the hard work and good for you for, I'm assuming you've probably used this with other relationships in your life, right?
Yeah. I use that constantly with myself, with my son, with my every close relationship I use it. Because you have to understand what's the goal. You can't not just place boundary. Why are you placing the boundary? What does that want from it? You have to be very clear first.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the boundary place.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. So that's part of that deep inner work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're getting clear with yourself and all the voices in your head, why you want this and why it's got to be this way, why it's got to change.
And it's not only about you. Why do I want this? When you put clear boundaries, it's going to help everybody around you, your close relationship, your neighbors, your environment. It's going to affect everybody. It's not about you. If it's about you, then maybe the ego is creeping in. But usually it'll be a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, because I think the natural inclination there is to think when you're setting boundaries, it's all about me, me, me. But what I'm hearing you say that it's not all about me.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
Because when you're placing a boundary, you're clarifying your place to the other. Isn't that freedom?
Mm.
Even the other person knows, okay, I cannot do this with this person. Aren't you setting the other person free? Like, for example, somebody is asking you for money over and over and not returning your money. When you say, I will not, you're actually releasing them from your resentment, your guilt or whatever. You're actually freeing the other person too.
So what you're saying is that setting boundaries is one of the highest levels of self-care that you can do for yourself.
Definitely. That's one of biggest works you'll be able to do for yourself.
That's awesome. That's beautiful. What a wonderful story and how you turn that around and the things that you learned from that. Other than what we've talked about, are there any other nuggets or advice or knowledge or wisdom that you'd like to share with the audience?
Self-care, coming back to self-care for mothers, I'm deeply, deeply passionate about this because stories women have been told while they're growing up and the culture as we have been speaking about. Self-care is not selfish. This is one thing I want to tell the mothers. It's not selfish. Because when you care for yourself, your pot is becoming full and it's going to overflow. How can that be selfish? You're so full, you're available for everybody around you. 10, 15 minutes. That's all it takes to look inward. You don't have to sit and meditate. Maybe journal. Maybe go for a walk in the nature. Listen to music and dance. Have a hot cup of tea for yourself, just for yourself, for no reason at all. You don't have to tell anybody anything. Just that 10 minutes of ownership for your own life give you much more energy and much more power. Like a battery, you know, or we say, what is the phone doing when we plug this in? It's getting charged. It's not doing anything, but it's getting charged so we can use it all day.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it takes, 10 minutes for women.
Yeah. I think, you know, imagine a large pitcher of drinking water or lemonade or whatever you want to put in it. And I think mothers pour themselves out over and over and over again. And people that are in service industries, health professionals, they pour themselves out and they don't pour back. They don't fill themselves back up. And you're right. We have to recharge. And you're right. We have to recharge. We have to fill ourselves back up. Yeah. So thank you for that insight. That's great. So is there, switching gears, is there an interesting project that you're working on right now that you'd like to share with us?
So right now I'm working on an 8-week project with parents mostly. It's an 8-week program where I teach them the mindset piece. I do one-on-ones and I take them through a journey from understanding their own childhood to understanding their children. This is an 8-week program. It's a little bit... you just have to spend like 30 minutes a day and they get one-on-one with me. I coach them and they get one hypnosis session with me.
And that's for parents?
That's for parents, yes.
Okay, cool. Are you limiting that to parents with children in the home? Or what about parents with adult children who are launching, say they're in college and they're kind of leaving the house?
Anybody, any caretakers, even teachers, you know, grandparents, anybody who wants to do this work. If something is bothering them, this is the place. Nothing will trigger you like the way the children trigger you. So if they are the reason of your pain, then this is the course for you.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Explaining that project, that 8-week project that you're working on to help parents. How do you anticipate that that's going to help parents be better in their relationships with their children and each other?
they get to know themselves first. They understand the beliefs that's led them so far, the myths about myths about parenting, and they truly understand about themselves. For example, Dr. Brown, if me, I didn't know the word anxiety until I was in my 20s, and I was the most anxious person ever. I wish somebody had told me you're feeling anxious. That would have eased my pain a little bit. And I thought, again, something was wrong with me. I thought I was the only person. So same thing with a headache. If you didn't know, it's called a headache. It happens to everybody. It's normal. This is the reason. Doesn't that ease your pain? But most parents, they don't understand whatever is happening within them, what kind of pain it is. They don't have the verbiage to it. They think they're alone in this. They think something is wrong because this happened to them. Mm-hmm. How does this all show up? Disconnection from themselves, disconnection from their children, resulting in yelling, screaming, punishing, and the child is going to carry that legacy forward of blame and unworthiness. I'm trying to stop this pattern. Stop this pattern, one parent at a time.
Wow. And that's a noble, noble work that you're doing for sure. For sure. All right. So, I like to end on a really light note. What's one thing left on your bucket list?
One thing that keeps changing, but
I noticed that you've traveled a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Like when I looked on your website, I was like, holy cow, Sapna has been everywhere. So I was wondering if travel was going to make the bucket list. But, you know, what's one thing that's left on your bucket list?
I would like to learn to fly. I don't know. Like to learn to fly, get a pilot license.
Get a pilot's license.
Yeah, maybe.
It's never too late.
Yeah.
Maybe you got to talk to those voices that are in your head.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Okay. Thank you. Sapna, you were so gracious to spend this time with us today. Thank you so much for sharing with me and my audience how we can learn to care for ourselves a little bit better. And in doing that, learn to set healthy boundaries in our relationships. And not only does it mean that we're caring for ourselves, we're actually caring for the relationships that we have in our life. Thank you so much for that. Please share with our audience how they can connect with you. Because I know after listening to this, people are going to want to connect with you. So please share how we can connect.
My website is sapnarad.com. That's sapnarad.com. And of course, you can connect with me on my Instagram page or Facebook page. That is sapnarad coaching.
Okay. Awesome. For those of you guys out there in the listening audience or you're watching this on live stream, just know that those of us who are mission and vision focused in our businesses, we depend on connections with people, because even though this message may not necessarily be something that 100% resonates with you, you probably know at least 10 other people that it resonates with, and you want to share Sapna's information with them. So that's how this all works. It's all kind of word of mouth, organic. And I know Sapna would appreciate the connections. So tune in tomorrow at noon Eastern Standard Time for our In the Zone segment, where I'll be recapping today's interview with Sapna and sharing how the nuggets from this interview really just beautifully interweave into the Genesis Zone Advantage. I'll be answering any questions that the audience has and exploring other juicy topics, we'll say, during that time. As always, most informed, most trusted, and most grateful you spent this time with us today. Until next time, stay in the zone. This is Dr. Brian Brown signing off.